Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Our colleagues at Gothamist capture the culture and stories of New York City. They're here now with the kind of a culture cast. Editorial director Jen Carlson, Ben Yak is the culture editor for the site, along with Claire Lampin, one of their fine writers. We're talking tunnels, subway troublemakers, and SNL's 44th season. Let's start with the troublemakers. Okay, here's your headline, Claire. You wrote, "Subway bandit can't stop, won't stop, pulling emergency brake at rush hour." When did this start?
We think that it started on March 11th. That's sort of the earliest recorded incident of subway mischief from this person, who has been described as a nutcase who is addicted to redacted with the trains. he is getting onto the back cars and sort of surfing, and he undoes the chains at the back, and then he gains access to the cab and throws the brake. So he prefers 2 and 5 uptown trains, likes to go express for maximum chaos. And it seems like he goes up the line and creates a bunch of delays in one direction and then makes his way over to the other side and does the same thing going back down.
So he's orderly, at least.
Yeah, there's definitely a method to the madness.
So do they have any idea who this person is? Because we were talking about off mic, the person has to be able to gain access. Mm-hmm. This is not like the emergency brake situation. This is like gaining access to where the brakes are.
Yeah, so they think that he has a key, which probably means it's just one person, although he has hit, I think, 747 trains so far.
747?
Or delayed 747.
Delayed 747.
Okay. Some of us have some conspiracy theories that it might not just be one person.
Yes.
It might actually be a troop of teams going around, egging each other on to sort of escalate this. Because that's so many trains. I mean, he's spending, if it is one person, how much time is that? That's like, you got to hit up on an average 3 or 4 trains a day in the 2-month, 3-month period?
Yeah, and he seems to be doing that. I think when you throw the emergency brake, it's sort of, there's like a 5 to 15 minute procedure that sort of unfolds from there. But it also, I read that it was about an hour roughly of delays in.
Wow. This is for. So what are they doing about it? What's the MTA doing about it? Or the cops, I should say, I guess.
The cops are involved now. They have not gotten back to me, so I cannot confirm what they're doing, although I believe they're investigating. But
well, they do have a photo or a video of what they who they believe is the subject.
They released a very misty picture of the suspect, where you can really only see his T-shirt.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, somebody actually tweeted that to them after they put the initial call out. That video was like a response to their tweet.
Oh, interesting.
Showing somebody at the end of the car looking very suspicious.
Yes. And I think he was spotted yesterday. Tuesday. Someone saw him, and I think he was smirking at the person who spotted him and making an obscene gesture. So he seems pretty satisfied with himself.
So this is layered.
Wild teens.
Could it be a disgruntled MTA worker? Is that one of the working theories?
I haven't heard that until just now, actually. But I think it makes as much and as little sense as anything else about this.
All right. Well, you keep up on that with us. We are going to talk. This is fascinating. Jen Carlson, headline, "Inside the Lost Jehovah's Witnesses Tunnels Under Brooklyn Heights." Where are these tunnels?
Yeah. So a few years ago, I heard about these tunnels. And it's not too surprising that there are tunnels underneath New York. But
when they're these kinds,
not public and you hadn't really heard of them, it's really intriguing. So me and my colleague Jake Offenhartz had requested this information from the DOT, and we had to do a FOIL, and we got all of hundreds of documents and emails going back and forth between the Department of Transportation and the Jehovah's Witnesses, kind of like laying out how this all kind of operated, because the Jehovah's Witnesses had to lease out the space that they had built these tunnels in from the DOT, and so they spent like $80,000 a year having them. Originally, we thought that they were just these series of tunnels that just kind of connected all of their buildings in Brooklyn Heights. They had a lot of buildings. But actually, they housed grocery stores and cafeterias, maybe, and kitchens. And some former Jehovah's Witnesses had taken video down there. So we have this video showing all of these things.
When you say underground tunnel, I'm sorry, my brain just goes to nefarious places.
I was just thinking like the mole people could like
I know,
sit
I
there.
Just,
I mean, and they are really like, if you go back to 100 years ago when they first came to this neighborhood, the Brooklyn Eagle was reporting on them a lot and openly called them a cult.
Wow.
So they were, I mean, the guy who had started it had been originally selling this thing called Miracle Wheat. And like, it just, and the labor is free. It's like all these markers of a cult. So when it's like a cult, a religious cult that builds tunnels, it's especially dark sounding.
And, a little creepy veneer to it. What are they used for now? Are they used
now? So they sold all the buildings over the past few years because they were relocating their headquarters. And all of the buildings have sort of been sold to different parts of people who are connected to Trump. But they
did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Is that a coincidence?
And so they, because they are all different owners. So, you know, new residents that are kind of come into these buildings that are going to be like luxury condos don't really want people to have access to their homes. So they had to fill up all these tunnels, and it was a whole process.
Wow.
And rebuild sewer systems and stuff that they had kind of undone in the neighborhood when they were building these tunnels.
It's a really interesting read. Okay, Ben, you're up. The best pre-taped sketches of Saturday Night Live season 44. That's the headline. You've been covering Saturday Night Live for the better part of your life.
I mean, it feels like that. I always say, like, I think Keenan is my dad now, but I don't know if that's legally binding. Yeah, so like, season 44 is in the books. I can't believe it's been 44 years it's been on air. And I think the fair way of assessing this season is that it was a transitionary season.
Okay.
The last couple of years, the show has really leaned on their political writing. They've gone all in on having a lot of celebrity guests playing Trump, playing all the other different candidates and major figures. And because of how well everything did in the lead up to the election in 2016, that was one of the most like popular periods, modern times of SNL, they have really doubled down on that. And unfortunately, the returns have been diminishing. It's very hard to come up with really great political material right now in an atmosphere when everything is so heightened and insane in real life. This season, what we saw is that the political sketches are becoming kind of unwatchable. They are very difficult to get through. I do not think that they are really funny. A lot of times they are just like stenography. They're just writing down the crazy things being said, and they're just not being funny as a result. But what happened over the course of the season is they started to lean away from that a little bit. And as they did that, especially towards the end of the season, the show actually started to get better. They started to get back to their roots as weird character sketches, surreal 10-to-1 sketches. And so I think we're looking at a sort of change that's happening. It's going to be interesting to see in future season leading up to 2020, whether they will continue to lean away or lean back in to all of the political stuff.
Who is the MVP this year?
I think Keenan is always the MVP as long as he's there.
I'm with you.
He is the glue guy. He makes every sketch work. Whatever he is doing, he can make everything better. I think the other three people who really stood out to me this year, Heidi Gardner
has become...
my favorite Weekend Update person. I cannot get enough of her.
She's super talented.
She had, I think, 5 characters on Weekend Update, and they were all hilarious. Kate McKinnon, she's a superstar in the making. She can just take any language you throw at her and just make it delicious with her line readings. And I think somebody who does not get as much credit as she should is Cecily Strong, who is another glue person, who she can play the straight person in the sketch. She can also go completely unhinged, like when she does Jeanine Pirro, her impression of her, which is just like physical comedy at its like best.
And we, I have a lot of time. I'm going to get to this. Okay, so you made a list of the best pre-recorded skits. They do these really sort of elaborate skits sometimes. Some of them, but the one that you picked out that I think is really, it's not one of the pre-recorded ones, is one with Tony Award nominee Adam Driver.
Right,
this one
right.
cracks me up. It's called Career Day. Let's take a listen.
Now turn it over to Mordecai's father, Abraham H. Parnassus.
Dude, what does your dad even do?
I don't want to talk about it.
I heard he's like super old. Is that true?
I don't know. He's a dad. Dads are old.
Greetings, children. I'm Mordecai's father. Hello, boy. How are you? Look at your father, boy. Look upon your father with pride.
I see you, man.
All right, Mr. Parnassus, why don't you tell us about what you do for a living?
Hear me now, children. For my occupation is of much import. For 82 years, I've been an oil man, a baron, some have called me. Now, what does an oil baron do? The answer? Crush your enemies! Grind their bones into dirt! Make them regret they were ever born!
Oh, sick!
That was your number one, Ben. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I've rewatched it like 3 times in the last 2 days, and I just giggle every time. I mean, the Career Day is a sketch they've done many times with different guest hosts. This is the greatest one they've ever done. Adam Driver just goes all in on this character who is like the character from There Will Be Blood, but 50 years later as an old man. And just his emphatic advice to the students to always crush your enemies is just the funniest thing.
We've just learned a lot about Ben right now. Team Gothamist, thanks so much. Coming up next, actor, singer, dancer Donna Marie Asbury talks about starring as the Merry Murderess in June in Broadway, Chicago for a record-breaking 20 years. Stay with us.